It seems like we've had some breaks from Genesis, so we remember that God created all things, and then God created man, and then God chose a line of mankind, Abraham, and said to Abraham, I'm going to bless the whole world through you. This is the coming Redeemer would come through him, and blessings would come, and so many other things. Abraham had a descendant named Isaac. Isaac, after 20 years of marriage, at the age of 60, his wife, younger than that, had a child, had twins, and their names were Jacob and Esau. And we introduced that last time, and the story, you might remember that there's an interesting story about Jacob and Esau. She felt this, and it said like a crushing tension. It was very difficult, this pregnancy. She said, what's going on? You have two nations within you. It probably felt like two nations at the time, taking up this, such an expanse. And it was told the older will serve the younger. That's a reversal of cultural norms. The older will serve the younger. So the younger is the one to promise. Then when they were born, remember Esau, the older, came out first. He was called Esau. It kind of sounds like Harry. And then Jacob came out grabbing, and he was grabbing his ankle. And that sounds, the word for ankle sounds like the word in Hebrew for Jacob. So he's like an ankle grabber. So that's where Jacob and Esau come on the scene. You might remember Esau was kind of a red hairy guy. He could have looked something like this.
I recognize that from somebody else.
And so by the way, so those of you children who have, or a coloring sheet, you might color those two. What color would you color? How would you color Esau? So there they are growing up, kind of. One was kind of a lot hairier than the other. Apparently, based on some of the ways things go on, even from youth, probably, they were in there was conflict between them. I mean, it seems to come out, I mean, from before they were born, and it's pictured ongoing. There's this conflict between them. That may be at the root of some of the things we'll see even tonight. So the text before us tonight is, so the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. Literally, his game was in his mouth. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I'm weary. Therefore his name is called Edom, red and Edom, Adom and Edom, you can hear are very similar. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob said, swear to me as of this day. So he swore to him and sold up his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose and went his way. And thus Esau despised his birthright. So here they are. Which one is Esau? The guy with the beard. He's hairy. Notice he's got a bow over his shoulder. And the other one is more... He has some books, so he's a milder trans. We're going to talk about that word, I think, on Sunday. The word, my translation is mild, the New King James. Literally, it often has the idea. It has the idea of integrity, blamelessness. But it has the idea of integrity as opposed to. Divided and compartmentalized. In other words, when someone has a true integrity, they're a whole, like an integer is a whole number, and a person with integrity, he has a whole character. You know, it's not like he has one face for this crowd and one face for that crowd. He changes depending on. He's not a chameleon. He's integrity. He's the same thing through and through. That's the word that's used here. So some have suggested that, I'll talk to them some more as I'm still thinking about what that means for him. But that's the idea when it says he's mild. I think we're supposed to pick up a sense of his character there. And so that might also reflect on the character of Esau.
He was very aggressive.
He was apparently very aggressive, yeah. Notice these verses. Afterwards he came, we finished this is from last time. His brother came out, his hand took hold of Esau's heel. And so he called his name Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. That's verse 26, verse 27. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter. How do you think? How old do you think the boys are when our passage comes along? What's your guess?
18.
Maybe upper teens, middle upper teens at least. Yeah. So from birth to middle upper teens, we skipped the whole section right there in between verse 26 and 27. There's kind of a big gap there. Just focusing on the details. So we don't know where they went to school, what sports they played, that sort of stuff. We're focusing on the main events.
Why is there a special statement about living in a tent?
So that's a good question.
Let's see. It was rather one contrast between an outdoor scene versus an indoor scene.
Yes, so... Okay, so he didn't... he didn't have a house, excuse me, is what I'm trying to think, how to say it. He didn't have what we think of as a home. He lived in a tent. But still there's a sense of stability. And I think what's going on here is, like that, I was talking about the integrity versus the wild man. You get the impression, to me, that Esau is kind of unstable. He's just going to go out hunting, get some food, come back in. You know, he's not taking care of flocks. You know, a hunter, well, he can provide for his family, but, you know, you're really not going to lead a household and have a, if you will, an industry of business in hunting.
Maybe he gets compared to a mountain man in our...
Yeah, be like a mountain man, just kind of taking care of himself, living for himself. Where the one who lives in tents, okay, he may be moving, but he's established, and he's not, you know, living out in the wild, and he is taking care of flocks, and he's managing the company business. So I think that's partly how I see these two.
And unlike hunting of today, where you can take a vehicle, you have to travel by foot, and it sometimes take quite a bit of time before, because in a settlement, you don't have wild animals come in, because that's how they protect the settlement. So they probably have to travel quite a bit in order to get out, and they probably stay many nights for hunting.
I don't think they had too many hunting parks back then, you know, with the high fences and the stock, the deer. Yeah, so did you hear what Cage was saying? I think that's a very good point. We often think of hunting as you can go out for a day. You go, you stand in the blind, you know, you've got your feeder out there and all this kind of stuff. You could be home by evening. He might be gone for days at a time searching for that animal.
You know, it's always bothering me. I would think that Isaac, even before the point where Esau sold his birthright, I would think that in Isaac's mind, he might be looking at the two of them, be thinking about who's going to follow me and be the leader of my people after I'm gone. And I would have thought that his judgment would have precluded Esau from fairly early. And certainly after the selling, he's not willing to sacrifice his hunger and then put much stock in his birthright. It just, unless Esau was so blinded by his favoritism and love for Esau.
Where is that verse?
I would have thought that as a leader himself, he would have been thinking about his two boys and which would be the better self-sacrificing servant leader.
Okay, so Dan's thinking, okay, a wise father is thinking, who's going to take on the business? Who's going to take care of the family? Who's going to be responsible that I'm going to hand this off to? But here's I think partly one of the things we glean from this text. There is a favoritism. He prefers Esau. Why? Isaac loved Esau, and like I said, literally because his game was in his. You know, he liked the game. That's not because he was starving. This guy had massive flocks. But that's kind of a shallow reason, you know, to choose one over the other. And you know, he's not looking at character. It's just sensual. He can cook a meal like no one. He can provide a meal like no one else. And so that's my boy. You know, that's kind of a. Yeah. And there are some that will say, "Oh my, this you know, he does this, he does this." I love that, but he's not really looking at character in the long term. So I think this is a weakness in Isaac.
Also, culturally, he's being the firstborn, he probably would have had that advantage. You know,
yes.
Older of the two, kind of a thing. And also, skill plays an important part, right? And in that part of the world, you need skill to survive rather than being an indoor person, if you are an outdoor person, but cunning and skill. I'm sure that
So two things, his skills, and the fact he's the firstborn. You know, it's kind of a, you're born with the advantage of the presumption of favor, and those skills. So, you know, the other side of it is, but they're good skills, but they're not management skills.
That's carried on even today. I mean, like, if you see the monarchies of today, too, I mean, they have the same tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John?
I have a feeling that, you know, when you talk about those two, we're talking about back in a long time ago, but I think even people at that time had a very family-oriented, they wanted that first, I think. Everybody works in the family and helps in the family. Now you got somebody like Esau going off all over the place and not even caring about the family's way I look at it. And but Jacob did. And he cared about the father and the mother too. And I don't really see that Esau is caring. I mean, then he gives away his birthright, so how can somebody want him to be?
You do see more of it, you know, he's kind of on his own. Yeah, Esau. He's just gonna, you know, he's doing what he enjoys without thinking about caring for the family. And so that can be kind of, the young man who all he is he's into his cars, he's into this, he's into that. He's not really thinking about family loyalties, family responsibilities. And so maybe that's part of that concept of the integrity that's part of Isaac.
He's what they call a man's man.
Yeah, man's man.
Jacob is a mama's boy.
So that's how it comes out. Jacob's kind of like, you know, the appearance is he's the mama's boy, yeah.
Whoops. Jacob kind of had this supplanter.
Well, and then, the whole word Jacob, ankle grabber, the name has connotations of a guy who cheats. You know, if you're like, when you're running in a race, if you grab the other guy's ankle, you know, that's you know, you're an ankle grabber. So, we see the event. Esau goes off hunting, and here comes the story. He's in Hungary, and he says, "I am hungry. Give me some." And the language is kind of like he says, "Give me some of that red stuff there, so I can swallow it down." In other words, he's not. You know, he's just.
he becomes a supervisor.
He's no connoisseur. He says, "Give me that stuff. I want to grab it down." You know, like, you know, and so so I've got various pictures of what it looks like. And so he says, "Give me some of that red stuff." Here's another picture. He comes in, you see, he's getting maybe a little reddish hair there. And one's cooking. Here's another picture. And by the way, you notice his nice hairy arms and legs there at that.
And he's smiling,
yeah. Yeah, he's hungry. And here's the picture we show. And so Esau, Jacob, you have to always watch me with these names, right? Jacob comes up with the plan, you're hungry. Tell you what, sell me your birthright. Okay, and so as soon as I put these low-fat poppy seed scones in the oven, I can fix you a latte and a nice plate of stew. That's kind of a modern translation. With Esau returning hungry from the fields, very hungry, Jacob heads to the kitchen to whip up some grub for the upcoming birthright negotiations. So I might say, by the way, it says red stuff, And then later on, it actually calls it lentil stew. And so here's where I thought you might want to, we might take a break, and to help you experience the event, we have some red stew with lentil beans in it. So how do we want to do this?
The Texas version.
It's a Texas version.
Oh, no.
Yes, true. But it has lentil beans in it. And there's some dried lentils next to it if you want to see. You guys want to go through the kitchen and get yourself a cup or bowl, and we can snack. You've got to have the experience. So while we're thinking of Esau eating of the lentil beans, this is what his evening was like. Let me put this on. So let's talk about. So you've done some good observing already. We looked a little bit. The people we see involved are Jacob and Esau, but also Isaac and Rebekah. So they're kind of a dividing. And this is a this is the young plant that's going to blossom with coming strife and problems. But we see the lines developing here, and so this is one of the key elements of some growing conflict that's going to come. And so but to understand things, to go with birthright. When you read that, what is birthright? And so, how do you find out that? How do you figure out what's the significance of birthright? You're looking at where?
Leviticus.
Look at Leviticus. I think it might be in Leviticus. I know Deuteronomy talks about it.
Double portion.
The double portion is mentioned certainly in Deuteronomy. What passage?
They get
here's what I want to say. First thing I started doing is I started looking at like commentaries and dictionaries, and so here is the Vine New Testament Expository Dictionary. Actually, now the Vine, there's a Old Testament and New Testament. So it's a dictionary that explains the language, the words from the original language. And so he's doing, based on the Greek New Testament, on the passage in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16. And so he tells us the birthright involved preeminence and authority. Kind of like, I think, what Cheji was saying. It's just a given. The firstborn has a certain respect, a certain authority. In a lot of cultures, it's just the assumed. He has kind of a higher status. Another benefit of the birthright is the double portion. And so here you see that's mentioned in Deuteronomy 21:17. And so I might even ask, would anyone like to? Maybe I'll read it since you guys are eating. We've got a Bible here. Deuteronomy 21:17 says this: He shall acknowledge the son of the unloved wife as the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has. For he's the beginning of strength. The right of the firstborn is his. The right of firstborn. And so that birthright, one thing it includes, so first of all, there's a certain level of respect, kind of the head of the family to be, the prince. I'm not sure what they call that in where they have royalty. But, this is the heir apparent. When it comes time for inheritance, the firstborn, the one with this birthright, has a double portion. So if there were, three brothers, and the first brother would get two portions and one portion each for the next two. So we see those are some of the things that come up in birthright. Another dictionary you can look up is called, we call it ISBE, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. And it mentions a double portion of what the father had to leave. The firstborn becomes head of the family afterwards. And then here's some other things that another Bible dictionary, Easton. Now these, I'm using some that you can find online or like through the Blue Letter Bible. You could have looked up these. So the Easton Bible Dictionary comments that he became the priest of the family. This is in the patriarchal period before Moses. When Moses comes, then the law is clear. You can only sacrifice in the temple, or the tabernacle, the one place. Before that time, every family had its own altar and sacrificed and worshiped. The father was like the priest of the family. The firstborn would be the one who would inherit that responsibility as head of the family. He would be like the priest of the family. And again, the double portion inheritance and even some judicial authority. They would need, kind of make decisions for the family, make judicial rulings. So all of that's tied up kind of in this position of the birthright that would have been Esau's. So summarizing, you know, he's going to be the head of the family after dad's gone. He has a certain level of honor and respect as the firstborn. There's a double portion of inheritance. And he's the priest of the family. You know, I think about that firstborn. I remember a wedding. I was a friend involved in a friend's wedding. He was Chinese. And he was the secondborn, and the firstborn brother had not been married. And so he was like, the term he used, jumping over his brother. You know, he's technically, you're not supposed to marry before the older brother. And so he had to buy his brother a suit of clothes to kind of compensate him for the fact that he was getting out of line here. So that was one of the things that was going on and that reminds me here that there's the older brother that you have a certain respect and honor for him. So that's the birthright. Pretty significant, right? What was the price that Esau traded for his birthright? The right of being the head of the family, the priest of the family, and the judge of the family, and the double heir, you know, the extra heir. What was the price he accepted?
Much.
Well, first of all, was it gold?
No.
No. Not gold. Was it money?
No.
No, not money. How about, okay, this makes more sense. Was it the flocks of herds? Did he trade for some sheep for his birthright?
Nope.
How about goats? Did he trade goats for the birthright? No. No.
Isaac knows.
No, not goats. Okay. Did he trade for camels?
No.
No, no, no. He didn't do that. Well, you guys are okay. You got it. How about for a nice steak dinner?
No.
No. Not steak and lobster.
And for sure not lobster.
Yeah, not really. So what did he trade? The privilege of being priest of the family, head of the family, double heir. Doesn't quite do it for you, for me. So,
put some bread in there, man.
You know, we put the, a really good loaf of bread. So think about it. You've just kind of tasted. Okay, maybe he ate quite a bit more than you did because he was famished. Is that worth trading away your birthright? Yeah, so I'm going to die anyway. And I'm still working on that phrase. That's an interesting phrase. So here's the afterwards, right? So here they are. Esau says, wow, veggie soup, that's a sweet deal. And Jacob is saying, birthright. They're both saying, sweet deal. Well, and there's the bread, by the way. Yeah. So you got that? It's the most lopsided trade. Until Babe Ruth was traded in 1919 for the Red Sox from the Red Sox to the Yankees. I didn't know. Anyone know about that deal?
Yes, that's good about Babe Ruth too.
Yeah, so I think they paid. They got $25,000 to trade Babe Ruth, and they were not again seen in the World Series for 40 or 50 years. So that's kind of this is a good. So if you're into baseball, there's a good illustration.
But not my own. Parkins or something?
Oh, yeah. Manhattan for a couple of necklaces and beads, yeah. They were right in those categories. So why? It says, Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank and rose and went his way. And thus Esau despised his birthright. Hebrews 12:16 says, lest there be any fornicator, profane person like Esau. who for one morsel of food sold his birthright. So the question we want to ask is, why did he do it? Why did Esau trade all of that for a bowl of soup and a piece of bread?
It didn't mean anything to him.
It didn't mean anything to him. Why didn't it mean anything to him? Okay, so can I, I'm going to make up an imaginary Trump child, okay? Mm. So, you know, Trump is a man of wealth, and he has a business and all that. Let's use him as an example. Okay. Suppose he's got a son that says, you know, the last thing I want to be involved in is finance or building, real estate. That's not my interest. And so, in other words, if they say, hey, son, you know, I'll make you VP over this. Dad, I'd rather work at Chick-fil-A, but that's the last thing I want to do is be involved in all that stuff. You see what I'm saying? He has no interest in managing servants. You remember, there's hundreds of servants, many hundreds, flocks, and keeping up with, he has absolutely no interest in it. But they would also tell me he probably has no interest in leading the family in worship, solving family disputes. I'd rather go hunting. And so you get the impression he sold it because it didn't matter anyway. So here's the expression. Okay, help me out. Looking at your translations, what's the expression where he says something like, I'm about to die? Give me some varied translations there. Tell me the translation you're reading. Barbara, are you looking at one?
New King James.
New King James.
I am about to die.
Okay, I'm about to die. Anyone else?
ESV says, I'm at the point to die.
Okay, ESV, I'm at the point of dying or to die. What else?
I think he had a problem with believing in God, is what I think.
So maybe he doesn't have much of a view of God at all in his life.
Right. Yeah, like when he talks about the feigned or fornicator, I mean, it kind of gives you the idea that this is just common to him.
Yeah, that idea of profane has the idea of like a doorstep you walk over. You know, he has no sense of the sacred.
I'm going to take another take on this. How about his mental maturity? I mean, like, Isaac was only 60 when he had his children. So
okay.
If you're saying these might have been preteens or teenagers, how much mental maturity would they have to, you know, take on the weight of family responsibilities or anything to that matter? It's almost like a kid saying, I'm going to write music for the rest of my life. Or, you know, just let me be playing my guitar, that's all I need. Or, you know, something like that.
Okay, so here we have to, we're not told how old they are here, but he's saying, is there an issue of like mental or emotional immaturity here where he doesn't grasp the significance? His twin brother, who's actually younger by 8 to 12 seconds, I don't know, seems better able to grasp it. But yeah, so at least his heart has no, he doesn't, for immaturity or just lack of thinking eternally, doesn't have a value for it. And that's where that expression. That's another one I'm working on. And, but there's an interesting way. There's an old Lutheran commentator named Leupold that makes some comments on Genesis here that I think are interesting. He says that expression we translate there, I'm about to die, literally could translate, I'm walking to die. In other words, you know what? I'm going to die one day. And you know the old saying, there's no trailer hitch on a hearse. So why do I care about that stuff? I just want, you know, he's living maybe he's living for the moment. For whatever reason, he has, and so, I'm struck by that. I think I've got to do some more work and see if I can track that down in other usages. But that's an interesting concept where his sense is not, if I don't eat, I'm going to die. Just literally, normally, if you're coming in from hunting and you're about to die, what's the first thing you want?
Water.
Exactly. You know, not stew. You know what I mean? And so, right there, it just seems like know, it just seems like something's not quite, maybe he's over-exaggerating, but I think Leupold might be honest with him. He says, what do I care about that I'm going to die and leave it all behind anyway? Why would I give my life to manage flocks when I could be out hunting? And so Hebrews says he's profane. He just, which has the idea of, as he treats things as common, he doesn't understand the value of things. So maybe there's something to that. That he doesn't, and I think somewhere in there we have to see he doesn't value things rightly. And partly, where's his relationship with the Lord? Because as soon as we know the Lord, it does tend to put everything in perspective, right? The things that we used to think of as important all of a sudden don't matter. All of a sudden, things that we used to ignore are very important to us. So,
and then later, how God treats him.
Yeah, Edomites end up having some problems in history. Psalm 137, that especially comes to mind because that's where I am in my... Psalm 137 was in my daily reading this week. And in there, it says, you know, that's the psalm where, I think I have the number right, but it's Psalm 137 where we were in the streams of Babylon. And they said, hey, sing us some of those songs as Zion. I said, we can't sing the songs. This is no time to sing. But it mentions in there that the Edomites rejoiced at the destruction of Israel and actually, you know, rejoiced in the Babylonian conquest. So that kind of shows you where the descendants of Edom end up. Let's move on here just real quickly. I don't want you to get so tired you're going to die on me.
Suppose he thought he could get it back any time because Isaac loved him more. And
oh.
You'd have to get the blessing to inherit the birthright.
This
little wimp, I could take it back from him any time.
So it's a question, like some people likely to figure... Eh, I'll get a good lawyer and I can endo this contract. Is he thinking I can get out of this one?
Isaac would get
me out. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. Maybe.
Culturally, it was word of honor and a lot more because
there
were multiple contracts.
Yeah.
So, today, multiple forms of contracts for me.
You're right. We you know, well, wait a minute. I didn't sign 12 forms and it wasn't notarized. We're back there. You told me. It's good. I think that's a good point. But here's the question. When we come to these passages, you know, sorting out some of these details, understanding it, knowing how to taste, make a good stew, what do we gain from this passage? What are some of our takeaways? And I'll write those down so I can use them in my sermon.
Words mean something.
Words mean something. Okay? That's there. Yeah.
What God says is significant, don't discount.
What God says is significant, don't discount. Yes.
Though Jacob was of the chosen line, he was still a manipulator.
Yeah, we're going to have this problem of this continuing, aren't we? Later on, there's going to be an issue of a blessing that he's going to figure out how to get. Instead of saying, hey, the Lord's already promised this. And is that, you know, some have suggested, maybe it was Leupold, that they've already had discussions about the birthright issue, and that's why he was so quick to bring it up. You know, you don't normally, someone comes to breakfast and say, by the way, about that birthright of yours, you know.
I was wondering about that, because otherwise it feels like he just really manipulated him, and he saw weak moments.
I think it's that, but in other words, it already may have been a discussion, like, well, God says I'm going to be the, you know, the chosen one or whatever, so I should probably have the birthright too. You know, maybe there was some discussion, and then and you can see here, the whole point is Esau doesn't care about him. What? And so, you know, that's one of the problems to me. One of the signs of immaturity is someone who's immature doesn't really adequately think about the consequences of their actions. Maturity, and that's related to the biblical concept of prudence. But with prudence, we think through, if I take that action, it can have this consequence. With immaturity, it's like they don't think about consequences. They just do what they want to do. And that's where he's living in the moment. kind of this almost a Zen kind of a thing. So I'll be in the moment. That's where our society is, isn't it? And they're not thinking through, wait a minute, where's this going to go?
He knew his dad, he sees his dad, what he's doing, and he doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, I think exactly right. He sees Isaac and says, that's the last thing I want to do, is figure out where the best pastures are for the flocks. I want to find the tastiest deer that's out there somewhere. Mark?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking forward a little bit. When Isaac wants to give the blessing, he wants to give it to Esau, right? And he sends him off to, Jacob and his mother cook up this, no pun intended, whatever you want, this scheme to get the, and at that point, Jacob's pretty nervous he's going to be found out, right?
Yeah.
And Esau's crushed when he loses it. I mean, it's kind of flips this whole thing on its head.
What I've been thinking is, but I've already lost the birthright. Dad, at least you can give me blessing.
Yeah.
And so when it gets snatched, but you notice in both cases there's the same theme: hunter, stew. And we're going to see some of the deception stuff going on. You know, Jacob the trickster, if I can jump ahead, where he takes advantage of the blindness of his father to misidentify. Mm-hmm. Guess what happens to him with his wife? Taking advantage of the veil, change of identity, the trickster gets tricked. And so there's some themes that will be coming along here.
Yeah. I think for both Esau and Isaac, beware of satisfying your carnal desires.
Yeah.
They turn to bite you.
Beware of satisfying your carnal desires the moment, not thinking through where is this going to go, being careful about those things. And even what you say, commitments you make. Barb, was you going to say something?
I was just going to say, it's really interesting to me that the one who is the hunter, meek, and the guy with the veggies, is like the opposite of Cain and Abel that were giving their sacrifices in meat
okay.
and veggies, you know?
Interesting. In the Cain and Abel, the vegan was the bad guy. the meat offerer, well, here the meat gatherer, of course, he's not looking for worship, he's looking for himself. But yeah, the interesting, these brothers, and yeah, it's the kind of the flip-flopping of those ideas.
I guess you must do the whole thing. I mean, it just kind of shows you that any of us are capable of falling into a mode of deception. And,
yeah.
You know, that we should be aware.
Okay, speak for yourself.
Speaking of the character of God, he's no respecter of hierarchy and man-made tradition.
So the tradition is firstborn is the head of the family. And so what does God do? Flips it around and says, this isn't the only time he does that. So, and so there we see God's sovereignty. He's not bound by culture. And again, that's a reminder for us that beware of imposing our culture on God, but recognizing his sovereignty. Beware of living in the moment and letting our appetites and desires govern us. And I think I'll mention on Sunday, I've got it in my notes, but in Proverbs it talks about the immoral woman who is like a woman who just eats, wipes her mouth, and goes on. That's Esau. You know, he doesn't even at this moment have a regret. You know, he's not even thinking about it.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly. Whatever. That was first said by Jacob. Perfect. You got to watch me on the names here. But you see where in some ways this is an incredible truth and lesson for the current generation, wouldn't you say? That's coming along. That's really wrestling. You know, you look at like so-called millennials, and I think of the millennial politicians now. They're making, the rise of socialism. We can do all this. We can give all this. And they're not thinking through, wait a minute, if we give all this, one day we have to pay for it. You know, they're not learning from history. What has happened in other where this centralized socialism is
is they're not thinking it through.
No one reads history anymore, Pastor.
Exactly. No one reads history anymore. That's what, which is our problem. So anyway, but the key is, though, a big fundamental that we need to have the big picture. And Jacob is thinking bigger picture. He's got his problems. He's not trusting the Lord to accomplish that at this point. I think Rebecca here is, she's a trickster, but she is thinking, wait a minute, God said it's Jacob. It doesn't say she loved him because, it just says she loved him. And I think but the key is, are we thinking God's thoughts? Are we God's values? Are we looking beyond the moment? It's so easy, we get so caught up in getting through the moment, keeping on our schedule, and losing track of where's God in all this.
Rick, is there any sense at all that Jacob and Rebecca were thinking, we can't let this guy run the show?
I think what Rebecca is doing later on in particular, she's not really in this one at this point. I think what she's trying to do is rescue the promise. What happens when we try to rescue God? It doesn't usually go well because God doesn't need our rescue.
End up with an Ishmael.
Yeah, and where she did well before, where she was dealing with the same barrenness issue. What they do, they prayed. But yeah, I think there's that weakness comes in. Well, good. Let's find out how we can pray for one another. Give me a moment to.